Welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Wade Wegner.
And I am not Steve Marks.
Well, today we're joined by Jay Schmelzer from the Visual Studio Business Applications Group.
Yep.
And we spent a couple of weeks now talking about tools for Visual Studio, both for Windows Azure, talked about Light Switch, and we figured we should just get the guy that's actually building this stuff into the studio and, you know, hear it right from him. So thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So now I met you about a couple of years ago, actually, when I was in the field.
Yep.
And you know, you were building some of the tools back then as well. But real quick, why don't you tell us a little bit about what your team does and kind of what your priorities are?
Certainly. Yeah. So I have the privilege, really, of leading the program management team inside of one of the groups in Visual Studio, specifically the Visual Studio for Business Applications team.
Okay.
Kind of a vague name, but really what we think about and what we're responsible for are all the experiences that developers have working with Visual Studio building line of business apps. So
okay.
Working with data, working with services. We specifically own all the tools around Office and SharePoint development, so
okay.
Folks building against that. We own all the tools inside of Visual Studio around working with Windows Azure and
yep.
SQL Azure. And then we also own the new tool from Visual Studio, the new member of the Visual Studio product family, Visual Studio Light Switch.
Light Switch, yep. Yeah, so I think it was last week, Steve and I last week we covered the Visual Studio tools update for Windows Azure and talked about 1.4 and went through a bunch of the enhancements. The week prior to that is when Light Switch came out,
yep.
And I think it was the second time that Steve and I had talked about Light Switch and admitted that we still hadn't actually tried it with Windows Azure. So from that, you know, Jay and I started talking, and we figured we should spend some time actually looking
yep.
into that. So
yep.
That's what we'll be talking about today. So, but first, as always, we're going to cover some news and see what's happened in the last week. The first thing to cover is our team just recently released a new hands-on lab specific to the Windows Azure Marketplace applications. So essentially, this hands-on lab walks you through the entire process of taking one of your applications, a software as a service app, you know, CRM app, whatever it might be, and connecting it to the marketplace so that you can start, you know, onboarding new subscribers, people can start leveraging it within their apps, and really find a new way to monetize it. And so this was announced on the Windows Azure team blog. I also put a post together with just a few more details on really what makes up the hands-on lab. There's five exercises, everything from first understanding the scenario, like what type of apps should you be targeting for the marketplace, and then everything from how you take that app, you subscribe it to the marketplace, register it, add support for various components, and then eventually publish it. And as part of it, we worked with the Data Market team to take the sample app that we built and actually release it to the marketplace. So if you take a look and select this, you'll see that our sample app is up there. You can sign up for it. It's a great price.
That's awesome price.
Pretty much free. doesn't do a whole lot, but you can take a look at it, and it's a proof of concept application that shows
cool.
the whole onboarding process. So definitely take that out. I think it's going to be a great way to use the marketplace and take applications you've built and publish them into the marketplace. Next is we're looking at the Convective blog, and Neil, and I do have an apology to Neil McKenzie. On a previous episode, I think I introduced him as the Windows Azure MVP in Ireland, and I botched it in a couple of angles. First of all, he's from Scotland, not Ireland. And he's also living in San Francisco, and has for a long time. So a humble apologies about that, Neil. But what we wanted to do is highlight the fact that he just published a new book called the Microsoft Windows Azure Development Cookbook, and looks to be great. I haven't gotten it yet. I have purchased a copy of it. So, but I definitely recommend taking a look at it. Neil is a fabulous MVP. He's written a ton of great content on his blog. And this is sure to be a great book. Some of our other MVPs have reviewed it, provided some input, and these are all great guys as well. So it should be a great book. So definitely check out Neil's book. And then a couple of other updates. So we've talked a lot about the Windows Azure toolkits that we've been working on, particularly around Windows Phone and iOS. And one of the things that I recently did is started to publish some tutorials around how to basically provide a new project experience using the iOS libraries that we've written. And essentially walking through how you get things started in Windows Azure to set things up. In this case, we're looking at using the Access Control Service, getting everything configured, and then breaking into Xcode and writing your first application, how to set it up, what you need to do to add some additional libraries that are going to be required in order to leverage the resources that we've built, and then essentially, you know, wiring it up and using the APIs to connect to you know, the access control service to provide that as a client for logging in, and then even getting out to storage. So
cool.
So there's two posts. One is specifically around using the access control service, and then the other one is around essentially a very simple auth model to connect directly to Windows Azure Storage using essentially the keys on the device. So take a look at those. Hopefully those will be useful. That's it. That's the news for the week. We'll have. I'm sure there's more going on, but this is what we've got for today. So, with that, I think what we're going to do is some quick magic and get it set up such that as we start talking about the stuff that your team's building, you can also walk through some demo
cool.
and show us some stuff. So we'll be right back. And we're back. So. So the tools, specifically Windows Azure, Lightswitch, et cetera. Let's talk about Lightswitch, because some of the viewers may not quite understand where Lightswitch fits in the Visual Studio family, and you know what some of the scenarios it's trying to solve for. So maybe some background there would be useful.
Yeah, no, that's a great place to start. So Lightswitch, we often describe it in one sentence as the easiest way to create business applications for the desktop and the cloud. So, you know, if you start dissecting that a little bit, you think about, you know, business applications, you think about data, you think about UI, you think about logic. When you think about the aspect of the easiest, what really we were doing with Lightswitch is we went out and we acknowledged with Lightswitch that we had a gap in our developer products or our developer-oriented products for people creating business apps.
Yep.
That's existed for quite a while. So in one end, we had tools like Excel and Access that are great tools for that end user developer, right? Mm-hmm. Someone that's not thinking about development, they're not paid to do development.
Yep. They have a problem,
and they want to solve it.
They need something to solve it.
Exactly. Yep. And then we had, you know, but they were very, you know, purpose-built tools. They had a set of scenarios they were going after, and that's what they were supposed to go do really well. And then you have on the other side, Visual Studio, right? This all-powerful general-purpose development tool for pro devs, and in between was this gap.
Yep. Which we all love, but intimidates the heck out of a regular business user developer. So.
Exactly, it's like one of us walking into the cockpit of a 747 and saying, I'm not going to fly this thing, right?
Yep.
So Lightswitch was about filling that gap. So we are about really two audiences. We think about what we typically refer to as an end user business developer, right? Or end user business app developer. They are the person that's not a pro dev, as we traditionally think of them, right? That's not their day job is writing code, but they're comfortable with technology, they're comfortable with software, they have the business need, and they're willing to go try it.
Yep.
Often what, you know, the best example that I used to see when I was prior to Microsoft doing consulting work was, you know, working with IT organizations, you'd have the business user would come up with an application idea. They'd come to business, you know, unit, the IT developer, and say, hey, can you build this for me? IT developer responded, well, I absolutely can, but on my list of priorities, you're somewhere down here next calendar year at best.
Yep.
So I'm not going to get to it. So that person has the need still, so they're just going to go off and try something. Hopefully in a tool that the pro dev uses, often not.
Not, yep.
And hey, some of these become extremely successful apps.
Yep.
They run the company, and next thing you know, something started happening to it, and the pro dev looks at it, and I don't know what to do with this, right? So we wanted to solve that problem for that set of folks. We also think about the pro dev as well, in the sense that we build on a set of technologies that as a professional developer building with Visual Studio, you already know.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to take those skills and make sure that you can apply them to taking Lightswitch applications beyond what the end user business developer did, building extensions to them, you know, adding new capabilities to it, or just supporting that application in an environment if it's necessary. So have to think about the two of those, which makes it a little bit confusing for folks. You know, you think about two audiences, you think about the gap, you think about the way to fill a gap.
Yep.
You're going to overlap on both sides, otherwise you have two gaps, right? So don't replace one gap with two. And so you have those things that are challenges for us. But, you know, when I talk to folks, I really, you know, it's about data-centric apps, and that's what we're trying to do here.
And so in this world, this scenario, where does Windows Azure fit? Like, what role does it play? Because obviously there's an aspect of Windows Azure and enabling certain capabilities.
Yep.
What is that spot?
So for us, what we're thinking about when we pulled in the support for Windows and SQL Azure, it was all about the deployment of that application.
Got it.
It's one thing to build the application,
yep.
but now I got to run it somewhere.
Yep.
Is
that business user going to, you know, now in addition to talking to the IT developer, going to go to the IT pro
right.
and start saying, hey, I need servers,
right.
I need a place to run this stuff.
Exactly.
You know, it needs to, you know, hit business users across the U.S.
Yep.
and the world
right.
and so forth.
And
so.
They're not. And so what better way to give them a reliable, you know, environment to deploy these applications
yep.
into, and they take advantage of all of those capabilities that are just built into that Windows and SQL Azure platform
yep.
In terms of all the reliability and all those great things.
That's
so.
Great. Yep.
That's
cool.
Kind of how it fits in.
Yeah. So what are we going to take a look at then today? So you've got some stuff prepared to show us.
Well, what I thought I'd do is, you know, since neither you or Steve had a chance to take a look at the product, I'd give you a little tour
cool.
of what this product does.
Excellent.
And maybe in the process make you feel bad about the fact that it really doesn't take very long
to actually explore
to actually
it
use this.
Give it a try.
Now, Visual Studio Light Switch is a new member of the Visual Studio family. So it actually is available in two forms.
Okay.
Folks can go out today and buy Visual Studio Light Switch, the SKU, the product, in which case you'll just get the Visual Studio shell and the Light Switch environment.
Okay.
For people that already have Professional, Premium, or Ultimate with MSDN, you already have a license to Light Switch, so you can just go download that, install it, and it will incorporate right into your existing Visual Studio instance. So as you can tell, I've got Ultimate here, in case we wanted to do some more ProDev things. So I've got Light Switch incorporated into my environment. In the product itself, there's really only two templates, the Light Switch application templates.
Mm-hmm.
We have a number of starter kits that you can install. We have an extension toolkit for pro devs that want to build extensions. I've got a bunch of that stuff installed here, so mine's going to look a little more complex than the default environment.
Okay.
But to get
that
started...
That doesn't surprise me that you'd have those installed.
Yeah. You know, I got to play around with the more advanced stuff. So we just ask you up front, you know, what programming language do you think you're going to want to use when you write code? One of the taglines is being... sort of used with Light Switch right now is coding optional. The idea being we try to take care of a lot of the base infrastructure necessary for an application for you and not make you write code there.
Got it.
You're going to write code as part of a Light Switch app. That's why you're building a custom app.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Our goal is, it's embarrassing, I coined this phrase early in the project and it's stuck, but the idea that I want you to really spend the time writing code that only you could write, the stuff that is unique to your app that I
yep.
couldn't have thought about as
yep.
the designer of the Light Switch product.
Yep.
Makes it challenging to demo Light Switch when I'm going to write code, because any code that I could think of, you could argue I should have been able to build in, but we don't always do that. So what I'll do is I'll do a couple demos for you quick.
Okay.
I'll do the equivalent of the Light Switch Hello World demo.
Okay.
I said we're about business apps. Business apps are about three things: data, screens, and logic.
Okay.
We start with Light Switch giving you some guidance to say, okay, you're going to want to start with data. Do you want to create data, or do you want to use some existing data that's available to you? We'll create some data. So we'll just choose the create new table option. And Light Switch is going to give me a design experience for defining that, you know, entity, that
yep.
business thing I'm looking
yep.
at. So let's say we want to do something maybe with employees. So we'll go define an employee, and then we'll just start defining the attributes of an employee. You see, we're trying to implement some best practices for you, like an ID value as
yep.
the key, things like that. You know, we'll just give our person a last name, give them a first name, maybe we'll give them a mobile phone.
This reminds me so much of a combination of both, you know, building, you know, data-centric apps and Access, but then also a little bit more of the SQL Management Studio experience as well. So
yeah, you see, this is where you see a little bit of that blend of the audiences,
yeah.
right? I have to admit that, you know, if people said this looked and felt a lot like Access, that's actually a really big compliment to
yep.
me, because Access, I think, really
yeah.
pushed the bar
so easy
on
to,
ease.
So easy
right?
to use. Yep. Absolutely.
So now you notice that when I did that, we got this type over here of phone number.
Right?
One of the things we did with Light Switch was really targeted at these business developers, said, hey, there's a set of types
yes.
that are common in the business world.
Yep.
Let's just make them first class things.
Nice.
You know, you store a phone number as a string, but if you know it's a phone number, we can do a number of additional interesting things with it.
Yep.
So that's what that does. And we'll show you some other places it comes in. But, you know, another one that comes in is email address.
That's awesome.
We can put some, these types can have little editors with them. They can have
nice.
Default
yeah.
properties or specific properties. So I could say, you know, Microsoft.com is the default
yep.
you know, domain.
Very
the last cool. thing we'll do is maybe like a status value. Actually, not a status. Let's do a title. And here we may want to restrict the values that we have somebody use. There's lots of ways we can do this. We could pull it from a table, but in our case, we'll just kind of code it in here. Maybe what I could do it as a string. I could go in and say, let's do an integer value, and then restrict it down using a choice list. Mm-hmm. So we could say, you know, zero is
nice.
Developer, you know, one is, oops, one.
It's got good validation in the tool. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, with my fingers, you get to see that a lot. You know, anyway, we can keep going,
yep.
Right? We just define this up. But you get the idea. So we've got our data. Now we need to create our screen. So we'll go in and add a screen, a way for the person to interact with this. Now here's something that initially is a little bit of a jarring experience to folks when they haven't seen Lightswitch. The idea here is that when we went out and looked at these business apps, there's a set of UI patterns that people implement over and over and over again, right? Detail screens, grid screens, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
There are also some common task flows that happen in an application, like I'm creating new data or I want to find a record and then work with it.
Yep.
So we implement both of those kinds of things in here and drive the UI with that. So we'll do a search data screen. We'll just specify the data we want and say okay. And now Lightswitch is going to go create that screen for me. Let's go do one more. Since we don't have any data yet, we'll go create and do a new data screen as well, and we'll create new data for the employee and say okay. Now, I can come back to this experience in a little bit later, but this is the design time screen designer, and because we use the templates, we found it's actually easier to drive it from a content rather than an actual WYSIWYG kind of design experience. But in Hello World fashion, we've created a data structure, we've added some screens.
Yep.
Let's just go run it and see what we've got. And again, I'm in Ultimate, so you get all the output windows and all that kind of stuff showing up. But now it's probably a good time, Danny, to talk about what's going on. I mentioned that we build on top of existing technologies and platforms.
Yep.
So under the covers, we use, you know, we've gone and defined an entity framework data model to talk to your backend.
Yep.
We created a set of WCF RIA services that will expose that backend data and any logic you've added there to the client.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've created a client application for you that can be deployed inside of a browser or as an out-of-browser application with access to the desktop.
Yep.
And that client application actually implements an MVVM pattern. So when we go back and look at the screen designer, you'd actually see that content thing on the left is really your view model that you're interacting with, and then the presentation in front of it. So
nice. So nice extensible architecture.
Exactly.
Pretty easy to switch things around.
Yep, exactly. Under the covers, what this really is a very model-centric way of creating an application.
Yep.
All right, so we'll go in and create a new employee. You know, we'll give myself a phone number. You see that when I tab off, it's doing formatting.
Yes.
This one just shows like additional things we can do here. So we added this additional editor as part of that.
Yeah.
You know, specify
nice.
And so forth. Because this was a required value, you see that we've already got, you know, something's defaulted to the first one. You know, all the common stuff that you would do, right? You haven't saved your data. You want me to save your data, right?
Very
all those
nice.
Things are just built in for you. Let's go create one more employee. Who should we do here? I always pick on Jason. I don't know why I always pick on Jason, but I do. So we'll do my corporate VP. Not always a good idea to pick on your corporate VP, but we'll do that. If I come back over here and look at my employees, do a refresh of that, you'll see that they're all loading. Searching is in here, so if I start typing Zan, we'll filter down to Jason, take that back off. Yeah. And then other capabilities like, hey, everybody loves getting data in Excel, so any of our grids and lists will support the ability to just copy data into Excel, and now you can go do whatever you want to with it.
It's really nice, yep.
So that's kind of the real quick Hello World version of Lightswitch. Let's go ahead and close this. Let's maybe play around with a couple more things. We're talking about cloud-related things, so let's talk about other places that we can get data. I mentioned we can create data or we can bring it in.
Yep.
So let's go add a data source. And you'll see that we support three types of data sources. We support a database, anything we can talk to you with the Entity Framework, SharePoint, or WCF RIA services that you build to yourself.
Yep.
On the database side, let's just go in, and what I'll do is I'm going to flip over here.
So essentially you're gonna grab some of the credential information.
I'm just going to grab credential information,
for
SQL
Azure.
So I'm going to grab the database name, because I just can't remember that database name.
Yeah, who can? It's a very user-friendly database.
Yep. So we will go grab our full database name. Just copy that.
Okay.
Come back over here to Visual Studio. Paste that in. Specify that we want to use SQL credentials.
Yep.
Specify my username and password. And now Assuming we got that right, we see the list of databases available. We got this Contoso Traders database.
Nice.
We'll go grab that. And now what Lightstep's going to do is, based on the credentials I provided, it's going to go figure out what elements of that database I can work with, I have access to. And you see I'm going to have some tables and some views. In our case, we'll just go use some tables. Let's grab like customer and maybe some sales information like header and detail. Okay. So I finish. Lightstep's going to go create that same kind of data structure based on what we found in the database schema, including all the relationships.
Yep.
And now it's going to go and actually just kind of create that structure for me and let me work with it.
Yep. Now you've got new data sources. You can create new forms on top of it.
New
experiences.
And I can go use
new screens.
Even though I can't change the structure of the data, I can still use those semantic types.
Got it.
Right?
Yes.
So I can go in here and say, this really is an email address. This really is a phone number.
Nice.
Right? All of those kinds of
things.
And
so because they're strings, you know that you can have additional validations on top of a type of string.
Exactly. And then we get the same editing and display capabilities. We can decide that there's certain things we don't want people to see by default when we put them on a screen, so we'll just turn those off.
Nice.
All that fun kind of stuff, like, you know, who wants row GUIDs and things like that.
Yeah.
And now we can just go add this to a screen. I'll just real quick show a search screen. Let's go after our customers. Run it again, and now we'll see that we'll get a new entry point into our our application for the customer's data source.
Yep. This is great. I mean, I can see all kind of uses of this where it's really pretty easy to create and define some screens connected to data, and yet you can have a DBA or someone else responsible for, you know, the SQL Azure database or the database running locally, and just let people build some apps on top of it.
Yep. And now one of the things I think is kind of neat is that, you know, you saw that screen design experience. It's a little hard to figure out what you're going to get when you're actually designing your screen. So what we added for the developer is, when you're running from Visual Studio or LightSwitch, you have this option in the top right to design a screen.
Yeah, I noticed that.
So I can take this individual screen while the application's running and put it into a design mode. And what I'm going to get is a preview of the screen with the live data, right? And now I can start interacting with it. I can decide that, you know, maybe the ID isn't something people want. So we'll just delete that column.
Yep.
We'll delete the name column. Maybe email address is something that's more interesting. So let's go ahead and move that further up, you know, and so forth. We can, you know, do sizing. We can change, you know, on other screens, we can change control types and all those kinds of things. You know, I have some other values in here I don't want, so we'll just delete those off, right? They're kind of off the screen so you didn't see them. But, you know, all those kind of things. Some of the capabilities are there, right? So I have paging. Mm-hmm. Is by default, so I can still do paging and interact with the application that way. Any custom commands I put on the screen, we'll disable them this mode, just so we don't cause problems.
Right.
But anyway, it gives me the ability to really get a live preview with the richness of that data, make my changes. When I'm done, I'll click save, let LightSwitch write those changes back into my project, take me right back into the application with the screen kind of reloaded.
Yep. One question. So great experience around SQL Azure. What about things like, let's say, Data Market? So we're familiar with Data Market. Is that something in the future that could also be another data source that you could just plug into this?
Absolutely. So one of the things that, you know, is missing from that add data source thing in the first version is just straight OData.
OData, right?
It's, you know, a little too early to talk about exactly what's in our next release, but it's safe to say that it's high on my list because of things like Data Market, right?
Yep. It seems like a natural fit for you, right? Because business users are going to want different types of data sets that are public and internal, and that's cool.
Yeah, it opens up a huge set of data sources for us, right? Now, one of the things you'll notice is the way this, I mentioned the flows thing, so this search screen, it wants you to find something and work with it. So I select something, and now I see a detail screen, and we just didn't have one defined, so LightSwitch spun this one up for me.
Very cool.
But you know what? I actually, when I see a customer, I really want more information than just the customer details. So let's go back in to LightSwitch, and let's create our own detail screen for customers. So I'll go in, I'll add a new screen. We'll choose a detail screen. We'll choose customer. You'll notice it's going to show me all of the related information to customer based on the database.
Yep.
So we'll say, let's pull the details and the order header. If I had other things related, it would show those as well. We can go in here, we got a new screen, we'll just F5 this, and we'll see that what's going to happen is LightSwitch is now going to replace the default generated details screen with mine any place the application is asking for details about customer.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of helping us with that flow through there. So we'll go in, we'll search customer. You know, now we'll go in and look at the details for this first one. You see that now I have a grid down below that shows me that. And again, the same thing keeps happening. So I could go in and I could drill into the header that's going to give me the details. I could create a detail screen there that shows me, you know, header and details kind of things.
Yeah. And what you've done in just a few minutes here is something that, you know, custom app dev, developer, I mean, it takes a lot longer.
Yeah, I mean, the way I think about it for, you know, for prodev is, yeah, it takes a little bit longer.
Yep.
It's not rocket science, nope, what we're doing. Right?
It's stuff you do over and over again, just same sort of stuff on different types of data.
And so now what you can do is you can get this part of the application up and running and now go in and spend the time implementing the capabilities your customer or end user is asking for with that has all the value in it.
Yep, exactly. Right?
And spend your time in the valuable parts there. We actually did an app internally for our administrators to manage the hardware assets that the team uses.
Mm.
It's fair to say that inside of Microsoft, is there anything you want to do, there's an MS something for it. So if you want to track assets, there's MS Asset. Turns out the administrators don't like that tool. So they all do it in Excel.
Mm.
And we wanted to create one simple application for them. So I sent two of my program managers to go get the requirements, pretend they were consultants doing the work.
Yep.
Day and a half later, they come back with an app that was exactly what they wanted. And the manager said, hey, that's great, but my data's all in Excel. Can you build some import capability? Sure, we can do that. So they went and spent another day and built that. Hey, I need to sync everybody with Active Directory. Can you build a sync utility? Yep, we did that. Built custom reporting. We built all these little things that normally we'd have never gotten to because it took so long,
just to build the core part. That core piece. Yeah, that's
so
cool.
You know, we haven't actually authored any code at this point. We could go in and do that. We could add validation rules. We can add code at the screen level. Just by, you know, implementing that, we could go into one of our entities themselves. We could add code for validation. We could also add code to interact with data going in and out of our database and implement our rules that way. So
cool.
We can do all that stuff. But really what I think you and the folks watching this for the show want to see is how does Azure fit
in? How does it fit in? Right? We saw SQL Azure. Very valuable. But yeah, let's talk about that deployment.
So when my application is done, I need to publish it.
Yep.
And we walk you through this wizard that basically gives you the ability to specify the configuration you want. So first thing we ask you is, what kind of client did you want? Do you want this as an outer browser desktop application that can talk to other applications with COM, it can talk to the file system and so forth? Or do you want it implemented within the context of the browser?
Yep.
So we'll make that choice. The next choice is, what do you want for your logic? Right?
Yep.
Under the covers, we built a three-tier application here for you. In a desktop mode, we can crunch that down into a two-tier application. In a browser mode, we obviously can't. So we default to at least IIS or Azure.
Yep.
If you choose IIS, that's on-prem, that's a hosting partner, right? One of those kind of arrangements. In the case of Windows Azure, obviously, we're going to go through that process. So now I'll say next. And now, like the Visual Studio experience, no surprise, they're very similar since they were built by the same team.
Same team.
We give you the opportunity to go familiarize yourself with the portal.
Yes.
So we'll go over here and do that. We can go over and, you know, grab my, you know, subscription information. So we'll just go grab my subscription ID. Paste that in, specify a certificate. Fortunately, I believe I've already uploaded one that works.
Yeah, so this is the certificate?
Yeah, this is a management certificate, which I apparently didn't, so we'll just go create one.
This is good to see. Yeah, so the management certificate along the subscription ID allows you to access your hosted services and publish.
It's basically the thing we need to kind of authenticate your machine with the Azure portal to do all these administrative things, right? So we'll go in here. We'll add that cert. Paste that back in again. Okay. Get that uploaded. Okay, it's there.
Cool. So it's refreshed.
Well, now I'll say next. And now, from this point on, now Lightswitch is just going to talk directly to the portal and the management interfaces up in Azure. So last thing we need to do, let's go in, just pick our slot. You know, production or staging, specify our storage account, say next. And now there's a few things that we do related to a Lightswitch application. So we are making the assumption we're putting your business data on the internet. So we're going to make you
use a certificate to sign the, so essentially it's HTTPS, right?
HTTPS, exactly.
So, yeah.
Database connections, you know, we're trying to put people down a path of success and follow some best practices.
Yep.
So you notice I'm being asked for two sets of credentials here. The first is the administrative credentials. So I need to create a database as part of this application. So these are the DBO kind of credentials.
Yep.
The second is the credentials you want the application to use.
Yep.
Hopefully they're different. We recommend they're different, but trying to send you down that path.
Yep, that's good.
We also, at this point, will collect any other connection string information. So we were using that SQL Azure database. Yep. If we were pointing to a test rather than production, we can switch that, and so forth. When we're done, we just hit the publish button, and, you know, some period of time later,
it'll appear and be
there. And
so one question about some of the connections and connection strings specifying here. Where is it storing it? Is it storing it in the CFCFG file with Windows Azure, or does it store it somewhere else within the app?
So in this version, we're actually storing them in the web config
and
files.
And web configs, got it.
Yeah, we made the two deployment paths, or the application look as similar as possible, whether you were doing IIS
or Windows Azure.
Windows Azure. Yep. That's certainly something in the future we're going to look at and taking more advantage of the platform capabilities of Azure.
Yep.
So,
cool.
I just happened to flip over. You notice this is that same app that I deployed that's out, you know, sitting at Contoso Traders at cloudup.net, querying the same database. Probably a slightly different app because it's got a few more things in it, but you see here I can do...
It's connecting to the SQL Azure database.
Yep. Here, one of the things that we can do, I mentioned the extension thing, right? The fact that we can, as professional developers, go in and really extend this experience and make it look different, or add capabilities to it. So if I go to the properties of my application, you'll see I have this tab for extensions.
Hmm.
And I've got a number of them installed. Some of our component partners that folks are probably familiar with, I've been playing with a few of those. They've got some things out there specifically available for Lightswitch, or you could use their existing stuff as well and incorporate it in. But one of the things that I've got in here is a new theme that my team has built.
Neo Metro.
Yeah, Neo Metro. It's kind of, well, you'll see it in a second. It's inspired by Windows Phone, Zune, and those kind of things. So I've just specified a different theme. I'm going to go into my, you know, my application properties, and I will switch to that theme. And I'll run my application again. And what we should see is that my application is going to look pretty different, even though all the functionality is the same, and I didn't actually change any code. So you see that the UI style is completely different, right? It's much more, you know, text-centric. Yep. We got rid of all of the additional kind of UI stuff. But all the capabilities are still there, right? I can go in and I can, you know, do fun things, and
that's cool.
I can do all my capabilities are still there. All the functionality is still there. Everything's still there.
That's nice. Well, you figure you've got business users spending a lot of time in these applications.
Yep.
And you want them to enjoy it and have a good experience.
Exactly.
That's cool.
You know, lots of fun things I can do there. Lots of capabilities I can do just within Lightswitch. I'll just flip over real quick and show you one other application. This one was all built within Lightswitch. We have a few other extensions in here. So here's a kind of an app that maybe manages the local contractors stuff. And you'll just see some custom things that we're able to do here, adding additional commands, adding additional UI things. So when this one loads up, you'll see that we kind of have this kind of custom startups thing where we can go and launch into stuff. Custom
different tasks. Yeah.
Custom global commands up here where we can go right in and like launch right into a specific screen. You know, import versus export. You know, all these kind of capabilities that we added in here for people to work with an application. And it's just again just a little more work and getting some custom code done.
And I think it's great. And I think the fact that you can draw that data from SQL Azure, different data sources, and then use Windows Azure as a vehicle for publishing it is pretty compelling. Yep. So. That's neat.
Cool.
That's very cool. Well, thank you for sharing all these things. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So I think we're at that time, that time of the show that most of you are probably looking for right now as you're clicking around trying to find the tip of the week. This week's tip of the week, since Steve isn't here, I've actually asked him to help us by providing the tip. So he was working on it when the show started. It'll be interesting to see where it's at. Hopefully, hopefully we have a tip of the week. So. I guess with that, Bob, I don't really know what to theme it on this week. I guess maybe Steve's not feeling so well, so maybe there's a good song or something we can do to wish him well, and hopefully he recovers quickly. But with that, here's your tip of the week.
Don't worry about a thing.
And we're back. So Steve has been working on the tip of the week, and let's see. So we're going to go over to his blog, and he published this one last week. He said he should have it up by the time we got to the tip of the week. So let's refresh and see what we've got. Excellent.
Hey.
He did not disappoint us. So this week's tip of the week is on redirecting to HTTPS within Windows Azure. This actually, the idea for this one came from some internal discussions on some distribution lists on how do you go about ensuring that if a person comes to your website on HTTP, they get redirected over to HTTPS. And so it looks like Steve's provided two different ways to go about doing this. Let's see. So first is using ASP.NET MVC require HTTPS attribute. So you can essentially attribute your controller so that when you hit an action result, it forces it to be over HTTPS. So that's great when you're using MVC. It seems pretty natural. The other is an approach that I've used a lot, and that's, you know, with IIS, use URL rewriting. And this is pretty neat. If you take a look at the code snippet here, it's essentially defining a rule that will rewrite it such that it'll redirect back to HTTPS. So a very simple way to implement the logic. In fact, I believe Steve used this as part of his blog post and sample last week where he was exploring the storage analytics. And so he just used this rule to redirect everyone back to HTTPS. Steve always also does some great demos. So he created forcehttps.cloudapp.net. So let's take a look at it. So right now we're on HTTP, and you can view this over HTTP, but no others. So we can't click any other page. So let's go ahead and say try clicking here. And he's got a self-signed cert, so we're just going to validate it. And you shouldn't be able to view this unless you're on an HTTPS URL. So we're right now on secure, so let's test this. Let's remove the S. And we're back. So
cool.
So a simple little demonstration, but I think a nice, easy way to do it just by using a rule within IIS and not having to write a whole bunch of logic into your app. I see a lot of people, you know, going into the global ASAX file or something like that and, you know, writing it so that it checks the URL and, you know, are you on HTTP? Okay, you are, redirect it to HTTPS, and this seems a lot simpler and more straightforward. So cool. Well, thank you very much, Jay, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thank you all. If you have any suggestions, comments, ideas of things you'd like us to cover in the future, you can reach us on Twitter at CloudCoverShow, and we'd love to hear from you. And with that, thank you very much.